Mentioned. Carrie Tuna is here. She is the president of the Open Philanthropy Project and Good Ventures, philanthropic organizations through which she and her husband, Dustin Moskovitz, co-founder of Facebook and Asana, aim to do as much good as they can with their giving. Through Good Ventures and Open Philanthropy, she has supported organizations including the Alliance for Safety and Justice, the Humane League, Mercy for Animals, and the Future of Life Institute. She has also invested in AI startup Vicarious, whose founder, Dilip George, will be on our AI risks panel on the main stage here tomorrow. Carrie is also a board member at GiveWell, with which Good Ventures works very closely. Please join me in welcoming, for another Fireside Chat, Carrie Tuna.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks so much for coming and joining us and taking time out of your very busy schedule. I know that everyone in the audience is very excited to have you join us and talk a little bit about Good Ventures and the Open Philanthropy Project.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So, that's just first question. Just tell us a bit about your backstory. How did you come to set up Good Ventures and the Open Philanthropy Project?
Sure. So I was a reporter for the Wall Street Journal out here in San Francisco when I met my now husband, Dustin Moskovitz. Sorry, the echo is distracting me a little bit. He had co-founded Facebook and more recently a company called Asana. And he wanted to scale up his giving, but he didn't feel like he had the bandwidth to do that. So a couple years into our relationship, I left journalism to work on our philanthropy full time.
Cool. And so, if you don't mind me asking, how much do you plan to give away of your wealth over the course of your lifetime?
We plan to give the vast majority of our wealth while we're alive.
Wow, that's absolutely fantastic. What was the kind of motivation then behind you and Dustin like wanting to make such a large commitment to the world?
Sure. That was a decision Dustin had made already when I met him, and it was something I really supported and admired. We have just so much more than we need to provide for ourselves and our family, and so giving the rest away seemed like an obvious choice.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us then, how did you end up meeting GiveWell, and how did that blossom into the Open Philanthropy Project? What was the story there?
Sure. In late 2010, I was getting ready to leave journalism, and I was learning about giving, and I read Peter Singer's book, The Life You Can Save, which mentioned GiveWell, and had a really profound effect on the way I thought about giving. A few months later, we were introduced to GiveWell by a mutual friend and started talking to them about the questions that were on my mind, the ideas I had about where to focus, how to compare and evaluate giving opportunities, how to learn, and our partnership really grew from there. The partnership, which we now call the Open Philanthropy Project, or Open Phil for short, is currently part of GiveWell, but GiveWell's working on spinning it out into an independent organization, which we hope in the long run could become a resource for other donors as well.
Cool. And when you first met GiveWell, was there anything about their approach that you felt more skeptical about or disagreements you've had with them over time?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember any particular skepticism. I just felt like they were asking really good questions that nobody else seemed to be asking. I spent my first year on our philanthropy talking to hundreds of people across philanthropy and across charity, and I learned a lot from those conversations, but I don't know that I met anyone else who was really excited about the questions of, you know, how to do the most good as a new philanthropist given the state of the world today and existing philanthropy. And so that's something that we started working with GiveWell on.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so that was, 5 years ago now, I guess. So in that period, you've made a number of grants. What are some, tell us about a few of them, and especially the ones that you feel most excited about.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of grants I'm really excited about, so it's hard to choose just a few, but last year we made a large grant to GiveDirectly, which makes direct cash transfers to extremely low-income people in developing countries. That grant was not only meant to provide funding for cash transfers, but also to help GiveDirectly build its capacity to fundraise and build its capacity to work with government aid agencies to compare their programs with cash transfers. We're also really excited about the Center for Global Development, which is a DC-based think tank that looks at how developed world policies, government policies, affect the global poor. In the US, we're really excited about criminal justice reform and particularly our grant to the Alliance for Safety and Justice. We're excited about the work we've done on farm animal welfare, where we've seen really exciting progress, especially around cage-free reforms in the US. And about the Center for the Center for Popular Democracy and their work on macroeconomic stabilization policy.
Terrific. And so recently, Holden made a post from Open Philanthropy saying that Open Philanthropy over 2016 was going to make artificial intelligence kind of main focus area and explained their thinking at quite some length. Can you tell us a bit about your own views on developments of artificial intelligence and that as a potential philanthropic cause? And if you have thoughts on, you know, timelines, what areas are particularly neglected and so on?
Sure. So our team believes there's a non-negligible chance that transformative artificial intelligence could be developed in the next couple of decades. And they see concrete work we could support today to help minimize potential risks around advanced artificial intelligence. We think if advanced AI is developed, it's likely to be very positive for the world, but we also see some possibilities, some potential for misuse or for accidents. And so those are the type of risks we think we can hopefully help to mitigate through funding some work today.
Cool. And so are there any other causes that you feel potentially excited about, but you just feel, I just don't know enough about these yet, that you're planning to learn a lot more about over the coming years?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we're still super early. I mean, only 5 years into this work. And to date, we've spent a lot of time learning about global health and development, about policy, particularly in the U.S., and global catastrophic risks. But another big category of work that we think is very promising, but we haven't only just begun looking into is scientific research. So this summer, we recently hired 3 full-time science advisors who are helping us explore possible focus areas in science.
Mm. Yeah, and obviously a really hard thing to tackle because you've got to become good scientists yourself in order to be able to know where the grants are going to be most valuable. So then let's move on to kind of relationship between OpenPhil and the effective altruism community. I mean, what are your views on the effective community at large, the effective altruism community? And what are some of the things that you think you'd like to see us do more of, or things you think we could do better?
So we consider ourselves a part of the effective altruism community, and we're excited to help it grow, both in terms of size and sophistication. We don't agree with everything that everyone in the EA community puts forward, but we consider the EA community a great resource because it's full of people who are also thinking hard about how to do as much good as they can with their time and their money, and who are interested in learning about our work and critiquing it in productive ways. As far as things I think we as a community could do better, I think there is a tendency towards overconfidence in the EA community that sometimes undermines our credibility. So I've seen this tendency in the way cost-effectiveness estimates are presented, in some arguments about how certain causes are really the only ones worth working on, and in some of the ways that the community presents itself and its accomplishments. So, you know, I think one reason we have come to trust and rely on GiveWell so much is because of their focus on self-reflection. So they're always asking, how could we be wrong? you know, what information could we get that would change our minds? And whenever they present their views, they try to communicate how much uncertainty they have. And that actually makes us more confident in them rather than less. And so I would really love to see self-reflection become more of a core value of the effective altruism community.
Okay, yeah, well, that's a great answer. And so, yeah, one thing that's been really notable for me kind of over the last few years is in terms of the causes that GiveWell and OpenPhil have chosen to focus on. So GiveWell First Starts is looking at both U.S. education as well as kind of global poverty charities. And over time, that's, you know, a much broader array of cause areas. But there seems to have been this, you know, GiveWell and OpenPhil seems to have notably moved more towards cause areas that, you know, were being championed in the effective altruism community a number of years ago. So, you know, the big ones being as well as extreme poverty, factory farming, and global catastrophic risks, and artificial intelligence as well. And then also including maybe more minor things that weren't talked about as much, but had some representation, like international labor mobility as well. And so what I'm wondering is just, what was the kind of causal story there? How much of that was influence from others in the effective altruism community on GiveWell versus just, there are just some good answers here and just two independent lines of inquiry converging on some of the same answers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was both. Mm-hmm. So we pay close attention to the EA community and we've gotten a lot of ideas there. And then we take those ideas and we check them out for ourselves and we compare them to ideas from others using our criteria of importance, tractability, and neglectedness.
Mm. Okay, that's a good, again, a great answer. And yeah, at the moment, it seems to me that for the kind of donor within the effective altruism community, there's something of an issue if you're, you know, really endorse the same kind of cause neutrality and strategic cause selection. That's kind of another one of the core values of effective altruism, because the traditional GiveWell donors, which are recommended charities that are aimed at kind of individual donors, are all within kind of global health and all economic development. And then OpenPhil, obviously, is making grants within other areas as well. But OpenPhil has been clear to say, well, that's not necessarily meaning that it's great for an individual donor. And obviously, there's animal charity evaluators as well, but that's just focused on animals. And so sometimes I think people who are completely cause neutral can say, well, where's the recommendations just for me if I'm just completely open on where to give? What do you think the best solution for that person kind of might be? Could they donate to OpenPhil, or what might the options be there?
Yeah, it's a tough question. You know, we have published, last giving season, we published a list of recommendations in each of our cause areas from our program officers, but those weren't vetted nearly to the level of GiveWell's top charities. But I'd be curious to hear if they were useful to people, and I could definitely imagine our doing that again. The Open Philanthropy Project does have a donor advice fund that individuals could contribute to, but it's not an option that we've publicized so far, partly because Good Ventures still isn't at its spend down rate, meaning that in a given year, we still have more money we could spend than giving opportunities we're excited to fund. So that would be, you know, something to keep in mind for anyone who's interested in donating to the Open Philanthropy Project. That being said, any donations would increase our runway and they would help us tell a story about how OpenPhil can be a resource to more than me and Dustin, you know, has a broader appeal and could grow to influence even more giving than ours.
Yeah, I'd donate there. So yeah, another thorny issue then is issues about kind of counterfactuals with respect to donations. And so obviously you've written at this at length, but for the audience, you know, a worry that someone might, an individual donor might have donating to one of GiveWell's top recommended charities is, you know, when there's Open Philanthropy Project there and Good Ventures there, why isn't that the funding gap of Against Malaria Foundation and so on just being closed by Good Ventures? Whether you might think, well, there's a few options. One might be that Good Ventures just doesn't think that's the best giving opportunity. In which case, then, surely I should just give someone else to, or give to OpenPhil itself. Or it might think, well, it does think it's the best giving opportunity, and maybe my donations are just kind of fungible, really, I'm just displacing Open Philanthropy's donations. Or the third option might be if Open Philanthropy kind of, or Good Ventures is holding back to some extent in order to incentivize others to give. But there, that might make you uncomfortable insofar as, you know, if there's just people you can be helping now and some of them you're not helping just in order to incentivize other people to have a greater good, at least maybe non-consequentialists might feel less comfortable about that. So it's clearly a very thorny issue. And what's your kind of latest thinking on this question?
This is another really tough question. And I have decided to follow GiveWell's recommendation on this. They've spent hours and hours agonizing over this question, discussing it and debating it. And so I'll try to summarize their views for you. But if you'd like to learn more, they've written about it extensively on the GiveWell blog. So there's a set of challenges that arise when donors want to give to the same cause, and that set of challenges we've started referring to as coordination theory. Imagine there are two donors, and both of them want to give to a charity with a set amount of room for more funding, but each of them has different second-choice charities. There are a couple ways this could play out. So the donors could each weighed out the other, you know, and try to maximize the amount given to both their first and second choice charities. Or they could sit down together and discuss the matter openly and reach some sort of agreement to split the cost. And unfortunately, we can't sit down face-to-face with the large number of donors who are interested in giving to GiveWell's top charities. But we think if we could, we'd reach an agreement similar to that. And so that's what we're trying to approximate in the grants that we make. I'm trying to think if there's anything more to say on that. You know, we try to fill the most pressing funding needs that the charities have. But for the rest, we are willing to leave some impact on the table in order to get the coordination theory right.
Like I say, it's a very hard question. So, you know, everyone in the room, I think, will very wholeheartedly believe in OpenPhil's mission. What are some of the things that effective altruism community could do that would be, you know, from your perspective, very helpful? I mean, are there, like, non-profit projects that you'd really love to see created, for example? They've already met a bunch of people who are thinking of moving into entrepreneurship, for example. What other things could, you know, be very helpful from your perspective that the sorts of people in this room could do?
Sure. So we would love to see, generally love to see, more people who share a deep commitment to effective altruist values and also have strong subject matter expertise in our focus areas. So in biosecurity and pandemic preparedness, for example, we'd love to see more experts who are focused on the worst case scenarios, or more AI scientists who are successful by conventional standards in the field and interested in AI safety issues, or people with communications or policy expertise who are excited to optimize policies around things like foreign aid or immigration or emerging technologies.
Okay, great. Hopefully some people out here can start to help on that. Final question for me then is just, what are some of the most important unresolved questions you have? What are some of the things that, if you could get some new evidence or new kind of argument, would just very significantly change your mind? Mm-hmm. So that question has been a bit of a theme of this conference, and mm-hmm. I'm interested in how it applies to you. So.
We have a lot of unresolved questions. So coordination theory, questions around coordination theory, which we just talked about, mm-hmm. are one example. You know, we have questions around how much weight to put on our best guesses around the far future, how to get honest feedback from people who might be afraid of making a bad impression on us, especially, you know, if they're grantees or if they want to become grantees, how to get critical feedback that's also educational to us and helpful to us, given how few people in general share our basic basic goals and premises.
Okay, so that was the last question for me, but actually that segues into first question from the audience is, yeah, how much have you spoken with other, you know, major philanthropists, foundation owners, and so on? What do they think about Good Ventures' approach? To what extent have you been, you know, to what extent has you talking to people had traction in terms of changing some people's minds?
Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time talking to other foundations and sometime also talking to potential donors, potential future donors. And I think that we have a generally positive reputation. People tend to be really interested in what we're doing around information sharing. I think there's some interest in our cause selection work, but also some skepticism, since it's not typically how a foundation or a donor goes about selecting focus areas.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And a second question then is, for kind of entrepreneurially minded people, and they've got an option between, you know, trying to like build up an amazing company and build up wealth in order to then give, or they could just directly work on projects that are, you know, doing great stuff. And if that's the dichotomy that's open to them, do you have any views on mm-hmm. what would be better for them to pursue?
So I feel like this is a better question for Will. And so I'll probably just paraphrase an answer I've heard you give before. I think that for really outstanding organizations and causes that have open positions or talent shortages that you think you can fill, like that, there's that's an opportunity I would be really excited about. And generally, I mean, what would you say for?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I mean, it depends a lot on the personal circumstance. So you can learn a huge amount doing entrepreneurship, even if you never make any money, which is true for most entrepreneurs. And that can be very valuable in and of itself if you're then going to work on direct projects. I mean, there is a possibility to do both. So you can be an entrepreneur that does something that has huge positive impact as well. And one thing I've been really happy with, I've actually met a number of people who are now doing this. The example I always point to is Wave, which is this remittances company that's both able to build potentially a very huge company, but also allow millions of additional dollars go to the poorest countries. And so it does depend on a lot on your particular circumstances, and depending on exactly where you can work, depending on exactly what the project is going to do the work, I think. So another question then relates to the Gates Foundation. So within the kind of realm of foundations, they're clearly one of the ones that are closest to effective altruist ideals. And many people within the Gates Foundation are quite excited by effective altruism. But one big difference between the Gates Foundation and Good Ventures, for example, is that the Gates Foundation prioritizes developed world education, so US education. Spends about $600 million a year on that. Do you know like why that difference is? Do you think that's more kind of personal preference on the behalf of the Gates family, or do you think that's actually they think there's something really like a huge opportunity there?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I do think it is something of a matter of personal preference, but I also think that we are, you know, looking at the opportunities that exist today, given the existence of the Gates Foundation and what they work on, given what other existing philanthropists and foundations work on. And clearly, you know, U.S. education is an extremely important issue, but our criteria are importance, neglectedness, and tractability. And it's U.S. education is a really popular cause among existing philanthropists, including the Gates Foundation. And so when we looked at the neglectedness factor there, we don't see as much room for a new philanthropist to make a difference as we do in some other extremely important causes.
Mm-hmm. Great, terrific. So next question is, you know, you said that Good Ventures is still ramping up how much it's donating, but still donated a very significant amount. I think, was it about $100 million last year?
Something like that.
Something like that. Quite a lot of money. And that's obviously a big change within the effective altruism community. So, you know, 5 years ago, I was really championing earning to give as this new concept that people should be thinking about. But, you know, a lot of people now might think, well, now there's so much money coming into these top causes that earning to give becomes a lot less promising and valuable as a career path. Do you think that's the right inference to draw, or do you think that there's going to be just so many gaps that OpenFail won't be able to fill all of, that, you know, smaller donors who are earning to give might be able to fill those gaps?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good question. I would say that, you know, we rarely fully fund every project that we are supporting and every cause that we're supporting. I'd also say that, you know, you might have a slightly different, you know, set of beliefs and a slightly different worldview than us. And, you know, you might be able to see gaps that we aren't able to see. So, you know, I think it depends, again, on your personal circumstances, and I would focus on, you know, the intersection of, you know, what the most outstanding, promising causes and organizations, you know, seem to you to be, and what you can uniquely bring with your talents and resources and worldview. Mm.
Yeah, does OpenFail have any policies or good ventures on how much of an organization's budget you'd be willing to fund? Because one thing might be if, supposing you had a policy, we'll only ever fund up to 50%, then the existence of good ventures could actually increase the argument for earning to give potentially, because now every dollar that I donate enables you to donate an extra dollar because for logistical reasons you don't want to go above 50%. Is that something that you have as a policy? Is it a heuristic, or do you just think I'm just going to keep funding?
We don't have a strict policy. You know, we try and fill the most important, pressing funding gaps with the organizations that we support. But we also don't think it's good for an organization to become completely dependent on a single donor, because if they did and that donor were ever to walk away, they might not have a diversified base of support to sustain them into the future, and they may never have developed the skills necessary to raise additional support. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, one thing that's been in the news over the last year has been the Chan Zuckerberg initiative. Which obviously was, you know, great news for the world. You know, what are your views on them at the moment? Obviously, they're very, like, even newer than Good Ventures. So, you know, how promising do you think, how aligned do you think they are going to be with kind of effective altruism values and cause neutrality and so on? Yeah, what are your views on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark and Priscilla are dear friends of ours, and extremely smart, passionate, well-intentioned people. I think they're still working out the details of what to focus on and how to build their capacity of their organization, so I can't speak too much to their future plans, but I'm really excited to see what happens and to stay in touch with them as they grow and learn so that we can learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, another question then is relationship between good ventures and, you know, open philanthropy. Are there circumstances that have happened or that you can imagine that Open Philanthropy Project would make a recommendation about a grant that good ventures should make and then you disagree with and just wouldn't go with? How exactly does that work?
Sure, I think that's certainly possible. It hasn't happened so far, and I don't anticipate, you know, any particular instances in which that might happen, but, you know, Dustin and I and Holden and Ellie and each person on the Open Philanthropy Project staff does have a slightly different, you know, worldview, a slightly different set of preferences, and it's possible that there would be things the Open Philanthropy Project wanted to do that Good Ventures wouldn't, but we haven't run into that yet, and I don't foresee it in the foreseeable future.
Okay, cool. Another question then is, have you considered...
But that might be an opportunity for other donors you know, interested in supporting the Open Philanthropy Project's work.
Yeah. Another question then is whether you've considered using cash prizes to encourage technological innovation that could solve key problems. And I guess in a way like the X Prize has mm-hmm. maybe incentivized certain sorts of developments. Mm-hmm. For renewable energy or some other important technological advance. Is
sure.
that something that's been on your mind at all?
Mm-hmm. We definitely considered it and think of it as, you know, a possibility that we're very open to, a tool in a donor's toolbox. And we haven't yet come across an idea that we're excited to create a prize around, but we're certainly open to the possibility.
Okay, another question then
is... And if you have ideas, feel free to let us know.
Okay, good. And so can you give us more of an update about the work that you've been doing on U.S. Criminal justice reform?
Sure. I'm not the best person to talk about this. Chloe Coburn, who leads our work in that area, is really the one who is deep in the details. But one organization that we've given a lot of support to is the Alliance for Safety and Justice, and we're really excited to see what they do over the course of the next couple of years. The people who founded the Alliance for Safety and Justice ran the Prop 47 campaign in California a few years ago, and they're looking to go kind of state by state to advocate for sentencing reform and organize around to support sentencing reform. So organizing directly affected communities, organizing victims of violence to make the case for a new way of thinking about safety in the United States. We are also doing work around kind of prosecutors' incentives around alternatives to incarceration and several other angles. So I'd encourage you to check out our website to learn more about the work that we're supporting in that area.
Cool. Another question then is, in early days, what really distinguished GiveWell from other sort of charity recommenders is just how data-driven it is and focus on metrics and outcomes and so on. And then obviously when you're moving to other cause areas, you often can't do that in the same way, and OpenPhil has been very explicit with that. So what are the core things that you think distinguish you from other foundations that you've interacted with? And then at least kind of from our perspective of effective altruism, how much better do you think you're able to do rather than what's a more kind of standard kind of foundational approach?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's still an open question. We'll see how it goes. But I think the two things that tend to set us apart from other foundations, one is strategic cause selection, so considering many possible focus areas and choosing the ones we think where additional philanthropy will do the most good. And the framework we've come up for that are the three criteria I mentioned before of importance, neglectedness, and tractability. I think the other thing that is unusual about us, although we're certainly not the only foundation to emphasize this, is our commitment to sharing information. So sharing a lot of the details of our work so that people can understand our basic reasoning and learn from what we've learned.
And then we touched on this a little bit earlier, but the grants that Open Philanthropy makes, to what extent might they act as kind of guidelines for personal giving as well? So if someone did want to donate within artificial intelligence, and hopefully you'll be making kind of grants in that area, to what extent do you think that would be good evidence for an individual donor who wanted to make a donation in there to follow those grants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it really depends. It might be that, there's a grant where we're funding a discrete project and, we're not excited about giving additional support mm-hmm. or unrestricted support. But I don't know that it would be clear one way or the other about that from our grant write-ups. Certainly we do publish a lot of details about a lot of grants so that people can learn about them. But I think I would look out for recommendations if we do them again from our program officers in each of our cause areas. Or, you know, if you're a relatively large donor, I mean, reaching out to our program officers directly and asking for their advice is absolutely something you're welcome to do.
Okay, terrific. So I'll ask just one more question from the floor then, which is, how much do you plan to do, does Open Philanthropy plan to do backward-looking work? So of grants that you've made, evaluating, how successful was this? Did we make the right decision at the time? How did things, ex-ante, how did things turn out ex-post?
Mm-hmm.
Including for speculative or just high expected value but low probability bets and so on. How much of that are you planning to do?
We plan to do a lot of it. We haven't done a lot of it yet since most of our grants are just getting started. But for each one, we plan to follow up periodically and say, first of all, when we make a grant, we try to outline, what do we hope and expect from this grant. Sometimes, if we can, we try to make predictions and assign probabilities for, what we think might happen. And then we plan to check back in periodically and say, how are things going? Did our support, did this organization accomplish, what we and they expected or not? And if not, was the problem something we could have anticipated beforehand, or we did anticipate beforehand, or is it something we didn't anticipate and we need to kind of update our thinking and our process to learn from that?
Okay, well, I can't wait to read those reviews. So, okay, thank you, audience, for all the great questions, but let's put our hands together for Kavi Tuna. Thanks so much for joining us today.